Oh my goodness, here we go. Get the scalpels ready. Those white foam boards, we'll bring them out. All that stuff in the attic from your part one, I want to see it all. No AI, no virtual, Midjourney, all that stuff. I want the real models. 20 seconds. All right, get ready. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this live stream special. I'm so excited to have some awesome guests here because today we're going to be talking about the value of still making physical models in architecture in 2024. I'm not on about virtual models, and don't worry, don't turn off yet. I know I love the metaverse, but there's something about real life as well. So maybe you were like me before, struggling with models or still interested in it now. We're going to discuss the art of a physical model in architecture practices. Is it still going? Now, for that, I've got some amazing guests here, all the way from halfway around London, East London, very cool. We've got Atomic Architecture and Sophie and Max. Sophie, Max, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Like I told you before, I'm on the slimming world, so I'm happy and hungry, but I'm keen to talk about the models. But before we do that, some people might not be familiar with Atomic Architecture, might not have spoken to you while I speak to you, and I love what you do. First of all, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, first and foremost?
I'm Sophie. I'm the design director here at Atomic.
Ooh. I'm Max. I'm the delivery director.
Atomic. Amazing. Yeah. We got the opposite ends of the spectrums complementary then.
But we do.
You work well together. But Max, you can design, and Sophie, you know, can do a bit of technical as well.
It's all about it. Yeah.
We try to do each other's discipline, but you know.
That's the way it's going to work. Now, further on, I'll ask a little bit of a question about who's better at the physical models, and you've got to tell me the real deal. But before that, Do you agree with that, Sophie? Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The secret's out. However, before we do that, you've done this amazing, beautiful overview of Atomic, and I'll get all the link and we'll share the website. But maybe should we jump into that first and foremost? Yeah. Would that be all right?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to bring it up. I'm not going to drive the presentation because last time I messed it up. Sophie, if you could walk with visitors through our viewers through Atomic, the world of Atomic, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that's great. So we're Atomic Architecture. And actually, this image you see here is what we're looking at the moment. We're in our model shop in, I think it's an old Trouser Factory. Yeah, sort of like a corner shop in East London. Wow. And we always pride ourselves on the fact that we're specialists. We do a variety of projects. And we do everything from design delivery, all equally as important. So we're not just pretty pictures, and we're not just on site.
So yeah, it's not mugs and boots.
And so we do a wide range of projects. So we thought we'd just do a quick overview of all of those. We do education. So this is Thorpe Lodge, which is with Holland Park School, which finished a couple of years ago. We've got a high-rise new build resi. Ooh. This is Cairo Place in Croydon. We do cultural. This is a problem. The model that's in front of us.
There's the models here, isn't there, as well? Yeah, there you go.
So that's the Antigua and Barbuda Youth Symphony Orchestra, and it's their new headquarters in Antigua. So that's kind of early stages, but one of our very loved projects in the office. This is an installation at the Baltic in Gateshead that we did with Alice Theobald, the artist. I think it's called It's Not Who You Are, It's What You Are.
Yes.
I think that was a few years ago, but we do installations, temporary. We do quite a lot of heritage buildings and a lot of restoration, retrofit buildings in like maybe the posher parts of West London.
Yeah.
Which are quite challenging in their own as well.
And then this is the delivery side that we do, which is the other sort of, it is all part of the same business. But this, I head up a bit more, and we work with other architects, developers, clients, contractors to deliver their sort of real life schemes.
Very nice. Very nice.
And that, oh, and this is the Royal Academy of Dance, which we also worked as delivery architects. Yep. That one with other architects designing.
So, let's just speak about them a bit.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, like a short introduction to it, Tommy.
Yeah. I love
it. You rolled into 15 seconds.
I think you did really well, because I think when I came in, there was two things that stuck out in the studio. Three things, because you did cook me food, and it was healthy food, actually. I think it would have passed the slimming world. However, I digress. It's a beautiful studio and you had lots of physical models. And the other thing, which I think comes across in the presentation that you do as well, it's not as, I think you do all the RIBA stages locally and international projects as well, but it feels like there's different typologies and sectors of a building. So it's not a particular house style per se, it's good design across all fronts. Is that a fair and accurate description?
Yeah. We approach every project individually, for sure. Yeah. I don't think there's anything we approach with a mindset or a typology in our heads.
No, and it's very much a studio. It's very collaborative. So there's not one overriding voice and style. It's all of us in there together.
Apart from stairs. Yeah. Stairs, everyone always goes, I've drawn something. Can you have a quick look at these stairs? Stairs seems to be my thing.
I don't know how I would have done well on your team with my stairs when I was apart. There's a reason I don't do that anymore. I'm like, these risers and treads, it doesn't work. And people are like, no, you just, yeah, of course you do this. I'm like, where have you got that stair from? But that was before. But I love it. I think that's great. I will dare not ask your favorite sector of building, because it's like children, all your clients, they're all very special in different ways. Yeah. But one of the things that I couldn't help but notice, the beautiful room, which you're in now, which is amazing that you're hearing it, full of models. Now, some architectures do less models than I've seen in the past. Some still believe it's very important. And we'll unpack that a little bit as well. But just on that note, you do a lot of models in the projects. And is it important to you both then?
I think it's one of the fundamental, as you said, like all the different things, like VR, all beautiful renders, they're all important. But where model making and showing models and having models as part of the process, I think it just makes, it's very collaborative and it makes everybody part of the team. Even if it's you in the office or you on site with a contractor or with a client or out in the community, it's something that everybody can, because not many people can read a drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
Not many architects can read a drawing. So it's a really, whereas everybody understands a model and it's very simply can get an idea across. And also we use it quite a lot to explore our ideas. So it's not just always the fancy finished model that, you know, that you want to read to see how amazing you are. It's all the kind of rough and ready models that you're trying to work things out with as well.
And I think it gives you the chance to step away from a screen, which is quite restrictive, and allows you to just free up your sort of thoughts a bit more. And you can be a bit more playful, can't you?
Yeah.
Like Revit is brilliant, but everything is it's already formed. So when you're doing a model, you can actually free form stuff quite quickly and create something quite, I don't know, a bit more interesting at first. And the way that light, just from a light bulb falls on it, you just get a different perspective instantly.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm glad you said that, because one of the questions that pops up, and actually someone in the audience has said as well, is are physical models mostly used for marketing purposes? But you're saying it's very much part of the design process.
Yeah,
is it sometimes where models are just made for marketing, or do you believe we got a project, we work on the model, like we work on the drawings, we work out the space and stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, both. There are some things like this, for example, you probably speak a bit more about that one, but there are stuff like this, which is mainly marketing in terms of telling an idea, but there's a lot of it which we'll go on to that you'll see. Sometimes it's literally just explaining the space to a client and watching them observe how that space works, and then reading that and going back and redoing the brief. And sometimes it's just, you've got to work something out that you can't do on a computer. Sometimes it is literally just making stuff by hand.
Yeah, I think somebody pointed out the other day that architecture space, it's all very physical. But if you're looking at something virtually, you're not, once you are and stuff, you can get into the space. But when it's physically something in touch, that's you being part of the physical part of it, which I think is really important to understand. So yeah, when you're trying to work out an awkward detail, actually making a model of it, you're instantly understanding what's happening.
I got you. You're thinking it through. Because I think that's one of the things that when I was in university, one of the pitfalls is that if you start designing a project purely from 2D, you just see it in that perspective. And so do you think then if some people who just design in 2D, there's just things that there's mistakes that get made then, Sophie and Max. Is that what you're saying, that just don't get picked up if it's not
in? When we price up, when we do the delivery side, what you see a lot of the time is it's a lot of interface details, because you can draw somebody in 2D and you can draw somebody in 2D really quickly, and you can have an elevation section planned, which is absolutely fine. But there'll be a junction you don't pick up. If you create a model, you physically make that junction as you're going along, so you'll pick that sort of journey up as you go. Where if you do it in 2D, sometimes you do miss stuff out, but it's not to say that models are right or wrong. It's just we find it really useful. And it also explains to, if we go to a contractor, say, look, this is really difficult detail. These are the things that we've got. And if you've got it in your hand and you can pass it to them, you can start really quickly visualizing how that can be put together or not.
Fair enough. And the other thing as well, when I came in, I got the lovely tour. I noticed now a laser cut machine, a few other things as well, because there's physical model as an art form, and it's a design tool which you use. However, there is also the art of making physical models, which were much more advanced than my white foam late night cutouts. There's a time and a place for that. But do you also then experiment with the ways in which you make different kind of models than Atomic?
Definitely. And I think each model is obviously different, but the 3D printer is a haven. As you said, if I was a student, I had a 3D model, it would have made life so much easier. But you can quickly print ideas out and kind of quickly see if they work or don't work, and without feeling like you've just spent ages trying to cut something out and you get a little bit emotionally attached to it. Whereas the 3D model can help move quite quickly through options. It's just we've got all sorts of this. Yeah. This stuff I'm still not allowed to touch in our model shop, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Oh, really? Yeah. And then sometimes, because architects, you can use 3D modeling services, but then do you think there's a value in trying to do as much in-house as possible to get that kinetic connection to the project, Sophie and Max? Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And we've gone through everything in this office as well. We've made our own models. We've had an in-house model maker. At the moment, we've all got cutting mats on our desks, and the idea that you're trying to do more and more, where you're just quickly trying out ideas, so it's not you have to come sit down in the model shop and try and work something up. So I think but when you're part of the process, I think that makes it, that's when it becomes like a whole team. It's not just one person doing a fancy sketch and somebody making a model of it. It's everybody kind of getting involved, which I really love.
And I think to do it in-house means that when you explain it, you can explain it quite clearly. If you send off an idea and it comes back made, you don't really understand the process from beginning to end. So when you do get questioned, and you do, it's not like a difficult question, but you then can explain exactly the process, your thought process from beginning to end.
Right. Yeah. Makes complete sense. Now, maybe it's because you've got the beautiful model in front of you. We're actually getting quite a lot of engagement at the moment. And Mr. or Mrs. Jay Warbank asks, do you use models to explore interior spaces in detail? I never thought about that.
We do.
Do you?
Yeah.
So we've got some examples on the thing of how we've used it in detail. It's quite hard. We don't do it in the kind of the actual finishes as such on a lot of them, but we do have quite a few where we've tried it out. Yeah.
And in two different ways. One was for a client on a lot of the heritage stuff that he doesn't understand 2Ds, which you were saying.
Yeah.
So we started making 1-25 models, which are huge. But then you pan a floor plate to him and you put in all the light switches, because these things was light switches finding plug sockets and locations. So we modeled that all out. So he can see it, say, I don't like that there, I don't like this here. And then the other one that we'll come on to is the picture that you're looking at the minute was the services coordination. Sometimes service coordination just can't be drawn, even modeled, in the same sense as if you physically make it. And you then look at it, you can see exactly what's going on. Yeah, we do it for internal spaces, volumes, and layouts. And we do it also for more technical stuff, like the services.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Forgive me, I brought it up, I brought it down. I'm not very good at doing presentations, but you tell me if you want to do a page.
And again, the Fort Lodge model that we've clicked through, you'll start to see where we have played with interiors and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do we take you through a few of the other models?
Yeah, keep on going. You go, Fred.
Because I think, it might be picked up.
Thorpe Lodge, which is our project that we talked about at the beginning, which is it's an extension to a school. It's a grade 2 listed lodge. It's part of Pollen Park School. And this project has been modelled. It's got every kind of model. So we thought it'd be a really good one to show. Yeah. So So this is the model. We did a proper fancy model that went into the Warren Academy summer show. It's so heavy that it needs quite a lot of people to fit pick it up, because it's I can't even remember. I don't think you can guess the weight.
It's like some concrete.
It's solid concrete. So that's staying where it is in the office. But what's quite interesting about this one is that we use all sorts of models. So when we design, we don't just kind of going to plonk an extension here. We try to really understand the history of the building. I can't even remember what the dates are of these ones. I know the last one's 1907.
Yeah.
All the years of how this adapted. And that kind of helped inform almost like how you extend it. And then this is the final model. And then you can use your models to talk to planners, the clients, other stakeholders, community. That's when the model starts to become really important. Mm-hmm. And you can't just put a plan up on a board and expect people to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful card model at that one. And on that kind of using it quite roughly, blue phone that creeped me out a little bit, but it is a really good tool to not be precious and to quickly see, oh, that's what happens if you do that to the roof. That's what happens to the light. This is what it feels like going from space to space, not being too precious, trying things out.
Volumes and scales. Yeah. It just allows you to really be playful with that.
Really. It may be like that slightly the inner child. So
yeah. No, exactly. That's it. I always think modeling goes back to being the inner child.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to ask, who's that little gentleman there pointing at the blue foam?
Do you know what? Derek is a lot of all these people. There's a lot of famous actors when you go
Ryan
through.
Ryan Gosling is in a lot.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling, he's a cool guy,
he's
you know.
Oscars as well, so I like to think that we helped him come along.
Nothing wrong with the Ken model actor everywhere. We do a bit of Ryan. I think in like my part one portfolio somewhere, I know it's not quite the same, but photoshopping in, I've got Zac Efron walking down the street and stuff. It's just got to be done, hasn't it? But anyways, I digress. It's very interesting. And this one feels like you could do this model a bit more faster on the fly rather than the beautiful polish. Because this is, there's a beauty to it. But what I mean, this is design process, does it work? What's going on? Yeah. Is that an accurate
Exactly. How does it relate to the, because the one on the left-hand side, which is the cardboard domes, that was the existing room. The bits to the right-hand side was the new bit. So it's how that all connects, how it looks when you look through, making sure you don't want to just plonk something on and walk away. You want to go harmlessly together. And almost as like the extension was always there as part of the original building, really. So the client's brief for this one on the right hand side, he wanted a 7 meter by 7 meter full art studio that you could go, I think it's 5.5 meters high. So you could paint 7 meters by 5.5 meter paintings. That was the brief.
Yeah. And the roof had to carry 2 cars.
And the roof had to carry 2 cars. Yeah. 2 feet at 500.
Who's parking on the roof?
You can hang them from the beams.
It's about sculpture. So.
Okay. Very cool. That's amazing.
And this model, almost maybe a little bit more of a traditional model, but one where you can start playing around with materials and grids and how it relates to the existing building.
Landscapes that is in the house, stuff like that. Views, vistas.
This one, and this is so subtle, but I'm telling you, there is a difference between each one of these.
this was to agree the render type, finish type. So there's a rough, a medium, and a smooth.
And there's also slight differences in the junction of the framing as well.
I can see it. However, it's a detailed thing. But Atomic, you're thinking of all the details, not just putting any old render up, right? Okay.
That model is about 50 centimeters high as well, isn't
it? That's 125.
It's not a small one.
Oh, wow. They look like they could be Oscar statues or something as well afterwards. Yeah. So for the Atomic Awards, you can give out them as well.
We get Ryan Gosling to present.
I wish. One day.
A little bit ambitious.
Yeah.
We also have this is what one of the things that Max has just talked about before, about you can play around with materiality and junctions and things that maybe you don't see in the 2D, but you know, kind of corners and what happens at those moments and how things come together. And we've got loads of sketches where we sketched out each junction and it was all detailed, but it's like that starting point of understanding how the timber is going to meet the concrete that's going to meet the flooring and how that relates to the inside. And you can start to just have that detail kind of makes a little bit fun and not just a cardboard model of a big extension to a school.
And this guy was very visual. He was an artist, wasn't he? He could read drawings, but these sorts of things just really excited him. And that he really got on board very quickly then, and he really wanted to get involved in terms of very much a nice way about the materiality of what we're proposing, how all these things meet. And he'd be asking between the timber and that sort of slate return, what would the gap be? What sort of setting out should be allowed for shadow gaps and stuff like that? So you can get into real detail then.
Yeah. And also that he didn't have a lot of time. So this quickly gets you the answer of signed off. You know,
it's quite, yeah, he's vice, very senior person in the school.
That's great.
We also, we were talking about before how the roof had to carry two cars, and also about light and how it relates to the facade and the grid. And
wait for art.
Yeah, that we could, with the EOC, the structural engineers, you can use these models to quickly just talk about how things are going to work. And moved on from this, but it's also, it's just a really good start when you're talking to other consultants as well, of just working through the details.
We use this for the timber guys that were doing the cross-lamb. Is it Balbooker beams? And we were talking to them about what their tolerances were, and they said 1% is what they worked to.
My goodness.
Yeah. So the model was probably had more tolerance in it than what they actually built.
Wow. That's an impressive statement. Your model.
They did fit. There was no issues, actually.
It's very impressive. This model, then, this is more like a specific exercise per se, isn't it? Where you're like, I really want to get a feel of what we're doing with this roof. And therefore, so it's a model. They can have different meanings. It's not just the marketing suite. It's very practical. It's very kinetic. The word I gravitated that you said, Mac, is materiality as well, isn't it? The feeling. There's a bit of that. There's a bit of that going on in the models as well.
It gives a sense of ownership back to the client, which is what really, really important. When we do these models, we observe the client observing the model to understand how they're reading the room. Because I always go back to that. When I was looking at houses, I look at the plan before I ever look at the photo, because I'm going to work out the rooms in my head. But for a lot of people, it's the other way around. So when someone's seeing the model, they're looking for what's important to them in their junctures. Then you start to take note of that, and then you discuss that afterwards with them. Which I think really helps get that design bottomed out, really.
Yeah, I got one quick question on that then. So all this stuff, these are the kind of things that get lost digitally in your experience then on a project if you get stuck doing models in it?
I would say from the delivery side, I would say yes, because it's very hard at times to get, because you could cut to try and get the same level of information as that model to a client. Sometimes it could be like 50, 60 drawings.
Yeah.
And anyone's attention, you've given me 50, 60 drawings and asked me at the end, I would just be a mess. But with something like that, you can see really quickly, can't you?
It makes complete sense. Forgive me. Is there a few more slides that we should show? Because I've rushed and clicked off again. I'm just fidgety. I think I'm lightheaded. Carry on. Go on.
Oh, this is one where we
talk about the interiors.
We explore the interiors, actually building, building bits of furniture, working out lights. Quite important for the art studio about how the panels in the design, the panels can shift up so you can have views out of the landscape, and they can shift down and they're not precious, they can be painted over. So they're basically creating massive easels for students in this art space.
But they had to all align.
Yes.
Because obviously to paint, everything had to be perfectly. So there's a really lovely way that they slide behind each other. And then when they click down, that whole thing is just, it's millimeters out. There's hardly anything at all. So if you used to paint the whole painting, you're not going to have junctions around paper or whatever they use. It's really nicely done, actually, by the contractors, really good contractor as well.
So so that's showing the client these little models of interior spaces and how it can all work. I love these little ones. I think there's one where we've got little taps in as well.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm liking it. You're speaking my language. This is a model for me. That is great, though. There are apartments, aren't they, in flats? There's a lot of details. My goodness, I wouldn't like to construct that the intricate details of that flower and vase. However, when it's done, it looks beautiful, doesn't it? If you were at a glance, I would have thought that's a picture or at least a render, and it's actually a real model.
Yeah, and the nice thing with this thing is what we're saying is that you can quickly orientate it.
Yes.
And get natural light outside. So, within a good reason that what lights you're getting in and how it goes through the seasons and stuff like that, it's really good.
Very good. Yeah, no more fiddling on the lights on 3DS Max and messing it up and doing crazy
hours. Never forgetting which one you've turned off and on for which room.
Yeah. At one point when I was working out what I was doing, and I'll cut the story very quick, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to do a bit of, I'll do 3D modeling because I enjoyed it. But you have to understand physics and stuff to understand the light to model it virtually. So in this scenario, let's just go outside, take a picture and get the real deal.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
No, we skip through these.
Yeah, I can go quite quickly. Yeah. Same thing. This is one we actually put finishes in. And actually,
there you go. Yeah.
This was done so the client just understand the scope of what we're doing to the existing house very simply, and then we could work out what we're doing to each of the finishes.
Yeah.
Quite a quick exercise to do that. Actually, image.
And there it is.
And that's the finished product. So you can see all how they come together to create this.
Does look good. It does look good. Fair dues. Where's the two cars though? Are they the potential to be hung?
Well, they've been ever been actually. Maybe they have. They haven't told us.
So disappointed. Not fit for the brief. But it's very nice. I digress.
This is the ones that we're talking about where you have these giant 1-25 models.
That's massive.
Yeah. And you can lift off each floor plate and just really understand the spaces. And as we were saying, put furniture in, put light switches, sockets, everything.
That's a serious model, this one is. Yeah. This is like advanced level of the video games and models.
This is definitely a doll's house, a little bit too much fun. Really annoying to store, but great.
Yeah. Still over multiple shelves and living in now.
And then this is another one, which we hadn't really talked about anything before, but this is all about the sensors.
That's cool.
It's competition entry for Cambridge Library. And I think it's dill, basil, rosemary.
Lots of dried.
So when you present it, the smell, I mean, it's amazing. And it looks great. And we were talking about this before, but most people don't talk about it, but how you box your model to transport it to a presentation. And just that, it's got to be a beautiful box because as you lift the box off, and this was it lifted the box off, and the smell that came out was just fantastic. And it's kind of wow, this is the landscape.
Because I went to the actual interview on this one, and we were about fourth, and the judges very quickly got off their seat, smelling it, touching it, taking photos. And there was really quite a famous architect there that was judging. And she was there taking photos of you, like, we've hit a good one here.
Yeah, this is off to a quick thing. I was going to do a quick mini interjection on that point, though, because you talked about delivering models. Now, when I was a part two at EPR, we did the Rams Quarter, and that's the project I was on. It was this big tower, and I realized that the value of a model is also the time that gets spent building it. So this model was really expensive. And guess who they put? They trusted to transport it in a van to Wandsworth. Me! And my friend, who will rename, who still works there, so we'll go anonymous, and he was driving, right? And on the way there, we're like, I've got to get some McDonald's. I'm starving. So we got the quarter pound menu. We got a few of them. And then I was like, because the queue was there, we were rushing. So we got back in the car and there were speed bumps, right? And we went over it. And then one of the top flew off and I was like, oh, this model's 20 grand. What are we going to do and stuff? And then I saw the model maker outside and he was a lovely man. And then he was like, Steve, what have you done? And he went, don't worry, this happens all the time. And he just glued it on the way there and went in and no one knew the difference. But transporting models is tricky. Don't you think that is one thing that you got to think
100%.
About?
Yeah, it's very annoying, actually. Some of these are quite large.
Some of the boxes take a similar time, don't they? Yeah. Doing actually some of the models.
The only reason I mentioned it is because you said how beautiful it is pulling the box off. It wasn't quite as beautiful me with Big Mac wrappers bringing it out of a van on site. That was a difficulty thing, but I do agree with you that once it was there, it impressed people in the meeting going up. It set, so it was worth it. You just got to think about how to get it there. And obviously, if you've got international projects, then I've heard stories about transporting and all this stuff. That can get complicated. I think that's one of the trickiest things with physical models is the transport doing it. So when you do cases as well, the question I was going to ask is, do you think about the safety of it, how it's going to survive getting there? Do you like structure it so that it doesn't get smashed in the back of the van?
Yeah. There's a lot of coffins. We call them coffins because there's a few that just shape like coffins.
Yeah.
There's a lot of boxes. We're surrounded by the boxes as well as the models as well in this office.
Yeah. They're a bit like a wedding cake kind of thing, isn't it? You don't want to break it. It's a little bit of a pressure and it's really valuable. So you just hope it gets there the best it can. Anyways, I digress. Go on. Forgive me.
This is a standard. Everybody uses it quite a lot for optional. We're talking about 3D printing. This is when the project that's in front of us now, we've got quite a lot of people from here, but we could quickly, it's out in Antigua, we could quickly try it. We're trying out just different things and we could make up what are the balustrade is going to look like, what are the shutters going to look like, what's the facade. It's just one of those things that's why, say, maybe 3D printing was really helpful just to figure things out as well.
Mm-hmm. There's an art form to it as well, isn't it? Getting it right, learning the different materials.
I've not said I got everything right first time, but I don't know if anybody does. So you want to try it out.
You got to experiment. Have you experimented with 3D printing as well?
And not as much as I think we could do. Yeah.
Maybe that's like the next thing, isn't it? What I've learned is you got to make things hollow. I at university spent a lot of money with a small thing, and then the bill came and they were like, that's £100. And I'm like, what? And then I've learned you got to hollow it in the middle. So,
is that the trick? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know very much, but it's just the one I've learned. Because again, when you get given a big bill and then they tell you after, you learn quick, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So hollow and you'll be fine.
Good tip. This is one where this is the installation in the Baltic and Gateshead. And actually I think it's about using everyday objects. And so this was actually 47 duvets when you come inside of the project. So actually it's about how model making doesn't have to be serious card or you can have just fun with it as well, just to give off the impression of some of the materials. You know, we're saying about the interiors that doesn't have to just be very serious card all the time.
So this one was really useful for when the people that were building the structures to know exactly how to fit some of the items together. And the duvets, particularly, it sounds silly, but it just tied in all the fixings. So it just allowed them to see exactly what we were hoping to achieve and then giving us some sort of feedback on that. It was good.
Very good.
This was a really complex facade that we actually, a client of ours, contractor, come to us and asked us to give them some hands on them. This was all about movement joints. So it's really highly detailed. It's actually... We didn't get the job, so it's probably fine to say Sky HQ's one. And it was about how the facade was so complex. It's about where to put the internal movement joints and plasterboard, which is really hard to detail in terms of understanding exactly how it works. So we built it, and we were pushing it and pulling it and everything. And you could see where all the lines started to appear. So then we knew where all the weak points on there were. And then we could present that back to the client. So this one was actually quite a physical working model, which was really useful, actually.
Looks very kinetic again, that one, isn't it? So it's more of a case study on the facade. Very cool.
Yeah. These
are exactly the same. When we do bids with contractors and we work with lots of architects, we obviously, when we approach it, we want to understand what the architect's designed. So a lot of the time we like to make small little objects of particular interest in things that we like, just to start exploring the detail down. So this is all through tender stage. So we're trying to understand exactly what they want. And then when we present it, a lot of architects quite like that thought, but we actually appreciate their design and we're trying to get it down to the one-to-one level.
Yeah, it looks good. I'm just curious. So it's like with that one, again, it's more about the light, isn't it? The materiality, the one on the right. You can I imagine that would be really cool in the office. It looks really nice as well.
Yeah.
Quite nice model as well, actually.
This is the one that we talk about for the Royal Academy of Dance, where there's the whole building was designed by Patel Taylor and the interiors were designed by Takira Shimazaki. And then we came in with the contractor and it was really, there was just so many limitations on everything. Of the shell was already there, but they had all the services, the dance studio had to be a certain height. And I don't know if you can see on this image, but there's like little like things where just saying where there's all the junction where things don't work, but you could have everybody, the subconsultants, the architects, you could have everybody around the table and work out what wasn't working and what was, and how, not just saying to somebody, you could just move your duct, it was you can't move your duct because of this, and you could work it all through.
This is where we talk about the next level to BIM, which is great. You can do clash detection, but the project we were working with recently, it's quite hard to even for the MEP guys to get it spot on because there's still a lot of moving functions. If they're updating the MEP, someone else might be moving a bit of structure where they found something. So where with this, we built it all, everyone can see it, and you can literally play and move it. But with this particularly is we're really strict on heights.
Yeah.
If we didn't get the heights correct, it was it was certain things of how they rendered it and it couldn't work. So we had to really be, it was like, there was no tolerances on FC land.
So that's it. Just showing how important it is sometimes, just to bring everybody, so everybody in the room can understand what's being built. It's really important.
It's a lot of diverse models here. It's impressive, actually. And it's nice to see you all enjoy it, but also take it seriously as well. Was there another slide to show?
There's one last one, but this is more
here
just
we
like
go.
A bit of fun.
Yeah, this is more fun.
So this is when Newham Heritage Month too, which is was all about, you know, 10 years on from the Olympics, what does it mean to Newham? And we did these workshops where this was a giant model that was part of the Queen Elizabeth Park. Mm-hmm. We did these workshops where kids came in with junk modelling. They just got to say what they would do to the park. Mm-hmm. And it just shows you that it's not about us being grown-ups and trying to do all these models. It's like, I really love junk modelling. It's just really fun for people just to use their imagination. And you can see what could come out of it with a little bit of tape.
Definitely. It's great.
There's some toilet rolls.
And it's just about expressing an idea, creating it, particularly when you get the youngsters. Like, I literally just did a model with my daughter for Great Fire of London. And my wife did slightly have a go at me because I was going a little bit too much. But it's great that it just captures their enthusiasm, their excitement into it and stuff like this. And you're just playing about with it. Kids can just play and put stuff in. When you put stuff into any sort of formed environment, you quickly, it's quite fun. It becomes a model as opposed to scraps. Do you know what I mean? And things like that's great fun.
It makes complete sense. And well, their models are better than mine when I was doing my part one.
Better than a lot of mine, actually.
Good for them. And I guess I think this shows how the amazing case studies and all the kind of practical ways you can be part of the design process in professional practice. I'm glad you still do it. Now, what I was going to quickly ask, because it's all this change in technology, right? And I can imagine being a part one again. You've got your mid-journey now, you've got your AI and all this stuff as well. Do you both still believe that students, when they're doing their part ones and part twos, should still do physical models when designing their projects in academia?
I think it's still really important.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. I do completely get it. Everything is very much virtual. And the images, I mean, I'm very much still old school, but the images that students are coming out with now is just unbelievably amazing. But that's the finished product. And I think what we're trying to say is the models are not just about the finished product. It's about using it all the way through to help you with your designing and help you understand what you are designing as well. It's very important in that.
I think one thing that was quite funny, I remember my part one and I jumped straight into a visual, and my tutors then, they were really quite fun in terms of we play with old fax machines and all those stuff to get an idea. He was saying, how did you get there? And you go, I just bought it. There's no history, there's no background.
So you just generated it backwards.
Yeah. And so there's two scores for. One thing's about just being really playful. It's a very stressful environment, both in studies and in practice. And models allow you just to take a break from all of it and just you're doing something practical. You're doing something that's enjoyable and you just increase your mind. And then the other thing is as well, it just gives you an idea of how stuff goes together. Because one of the biggest issues with quite a few people that come out of university and you can't learn everything is just understanding what's important about junctions and how stuff is held up and stuff like that. Because you don't learn it. If you make a model, you can't just put a model there and expect it to stand up. You physically have to put stuff in there. And we had a really good tutor, actually, that really pushed us, because I didn't like model making, but
yeah.
He pushed us, and it changed my outlook into modelling, actually.
Yeah. I'm glad they persevered through. You're right, because with all these technical tools, I can just see how it can be tempting. But it's good to know then you still value it. And as a team, what I touched upon is because some people in the Architecture Social are working in the industry, some of the audience of the Architecture Social may be students and stuff as well. I think that in a CV and portfolio, it's still very valuable to show physical models. So when you're both hiring, when that pops up and you're doing it, if you see a physical model, do you think then that's a massive tick in the box for you?
Definitely. Yeah. It's a really big tick.
Yeah.
Physical models and sketches.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's
really important. Obviously, we haven't touched on sketching, but I think sketching is just one of those things as well. It's almost like it's that analog, it's that drawing of, you've got to be able to sketch in a meeting. You can't just turn around to somebody saying, I'm just going to go back and work it out on computer. You know, you've got to work things out with people. I think that's the whole, that collaboration, working with people and not just being about you trying to figure stuff out.
Some of my best ideas when I'm walking between somewhere, so I can't quickly get a model or a computer up and draw it. You have to literally just quickly take a note and do a quick sketch. And that sometimes gets me out of some of the most difficult junctions I had to put together. You just walk down the street and you suddenly go, ah. So I think that the diversity, obviously, we view lots of lovely visuals as well, but there is, I think, the more diverse you are, your client base is going to be diverse. We work with a client who, he used to find it offensive when one of the project managers used iPad to take notes because he's always liked it on a page. So we all have these. So we take him to, when we see him, we make sure we have a pen and a pad because he, whilst he knows that you might be taking notes, he thinks it's a distraction. So you've got to be diverse to your clients. And the more diverse you learn, the more then you can express yourself in different ways. If you can only go one approach and they don't get that, then you're going to have to, you're in a bit of an impasse where you can do it multiple ways.
Yeah.
You can explain yourself a lot easier.
Yeah, it's interesting. I won't go too much off on the tangent on it, but especially when it comes to interviewing, you were now really the interviewer. So but when we've been interviewees before, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I was looking for jobs, you printed out your portfolio, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you had that kinetic part of it. And it's quite interesting at the moment how it can be predominantly digital. And I just wonder sometimes if you miss that. The tricky thing is, sometimes I do think physical portfolio can be expensive for a student, all this stuff. But then there is something nice about it, curating it, getting it ready for it. Whereas I sometimes worry with digital, you go, here's the full portfolio and a crap load of files that I've just got there. It's not really curated and stuff. What's your experience with in that? People bring in portfolios?
People still bringing in physical portfolios. I'd struggle to flick through somebody's laptops, look at me. I like to be nosy while they're talking to somebody else in the interview. To be looking at other stuff as well, which you can't do when it's all on screen.
I think the thing is with that is, look, you want to get across quite a diverse amount of work. So I would say I think it's fine to have digital, but I would definitely print some of the, there's key images everyone's going to be proud of.
Yeah,
I'd print them out and a sketch pad. Bring a sketch pad as well, so then we can see the image. You can go through the sketch pad and you can talk about their way of thinking, because a lot of the way we work is we are quite individual, but together we think and try and get to stuff in a similar way. So like we do lots of sketches and Mike's sketching is absolutely amazing. Yeah. My sketching, I would say, is not great, but it gets me where I need to get into. So it's quite nice to think of that. So we do that sort of thing. And again, if you take a step back and score in your notebook, you can get ideas out so quickly.
Yeah.
And it gives us a bit of an understanding of their thought process, which is quite useful.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think sometimes everyone gets caught up in, should it be one or the other? Actually, they're all tools to be used, aren't they? And I really like what you said of, here's my printed portfolio. However, if you're really interested in this particular part of the project, give me one sec, I might have it on my tablet or whatever, right? And then you've... But then, as Sophie said earlier, the problems with tablets and stuff, they crash or they don't work or the room's shiny. And the worst thing I've ever seen is interviews where someone has to load up a presentation on a piece of computer and it doesn't work, or there's that awkward moment and it just throws off the balance. Whereas if you had the book, you go, hey, here we go. And it's there. I really get what you mean. Now,
you still have that issue when we do presentations. You go to the thing and you put the machine in. 15 minutes later, everyone's sitting there and you're like, we're just going to have to start talking, I think.
Always have hard copies.
Yeah, always have hard copies.
Yeah, point I think is the bane of existence. Sometimes though, when I give presentations, I'm reluctant to give people a book because then they go off on a tangent. And also, I think PowerPoint's quite a topic for another day, but you can hide a lot in a PowerPoint compared to a real portfolio. There's a lot going on between one glossy image and a real portfolio in an interview. So I do think it's really important. Now, before you go again, we touched upon at the start, Atomic. We've really gone into physical models. I can totally see the value there, but I want to just touch on a little bit more about the practice before we go. I'll get up the beautiful website now, but maybe if you can just you know, refreshing a little bit more about what Atomic is, that would be great. And so where are you at the moment then in the world? You're in London. What part?
So we're in Stratford or Maryland, if anyone knows East London particularly well, which is, yeah, and we took over an old, we used to be in Dawson, which is where you had a separate studio. And then we moved here because Dawson just become extortionate. For rent. Yeah. So we've taken over that. So we connect, it's nicely connected. And then our project's to be mainly central London anyway. So it's perfect for us. Yeah. Straight on the Elizabeth line to pretty much every site. And we like, the other thing is we do really like to go to site. I like to be site as much as I can. It's part of that practice is that. And the other thing that I always tell students, if they're going to go to an interview, communication is key. So always, if you don't answer your phone, reply to a message. Because there was... the amount of people you do that, that's one bit of advice I get, because we got the amount of jobs we've got just by answering phones. It's quite phenomenal, actually. Yeah. I like to think it's all the glossy pictures, but sometimes it's answering the phone. Yeah. Yes. And there's, yeah, so we work on a lot of diverse stuff. Lead up the... We're not really split, but we have a lot of design and then a lot of delivery as well, don't we?
But the design, I think what we always say, though, is you can't design something without understanding the technical side of it. You can't draw a line if you don't know what that line means. The technical is equally still feeds back into everything to do at the early design stages as well.
I love it. I was very impressed when I came. It felt, I know you're a team, but it had a really nice family feel as well. And I felt very...
You made a really good soup. It was a good soup.
Yeah, exactly. I was very full. It was very cool. The only thing that I was disappointed to learn, which has got nothing to do with Atomic, Maryland, it's not the place that Maryland cookies come from that my grandma... I don't know where that came from. Who named this place Maryland? I was disappointed.
But we have to have a complaint. We'll take it up with you.
Don't worry about it. You're too busy with what you do. But say now someone wants to get in contact with you and all that stuff. How do they get in touch with you?
the
website.
I guess the website, we're all on LinkedIn as well. And we do, part of the thing that we've started last year is we started writing a lot of articles. So this sort of thing is a carry on from a lot of stuff we talk about, practice. We do lots of networking stuff as well. So we're out and about. So if you see us and you've seen this and you want to chat about anything, just I'm always happy to chat because networking is awkward.
it makes complete sense. I love what you do. I love this conversation. I think people should check out Atomic. The only thing that I noticed on this page, so here's you guys as well. The only thing I was slightly disappointed is Mike has the most amazing hats, and this picture doesn't have a Mike's hat on it.
I know.
You
know? Hats, a nice hat.
I think hats are a new addition, so maybe we have to...
Just a suggestion. It's all very good. I would just like, if I was in the meeting room when they were designing this website, I'd go, it's great, but you know what we need? A bit more hats.
Yeah, there's not enough hats in architecture, I think.
That's the first thing I saw when I was, you know, in London. Bill, I know you're saying I was on busy stuff. I was just in the days, and I got up, and I just see a hat, and it was Mike in the hat, and I was like, Mike!
You bring the star to London.
Definitely did. He stepped up for that. I didn't quite realise that was happening.
It did, but hat or hatless, I love Atomic. I love what you do, and everyone should check you out. Now, the last thing before you go, it's rude of me to ask all these questions, put you on the spot, all this stuff, and you don't get to ask any questions to me. And because we know each other, you can ask anything, try to catch me out, get me on the spot, it's live, whatever you want, whether it's about recruitment, whether it's about the industry, whether it's about the architecture social, whether it's about my terrible model making and transport skills. Is there anything you both like to ask me?
I don't know. I feel like you mentioned it before, but I'm quite interested in, because you obviously see a lot of portfolios that come in.
Yeah.
If you find that all students and people who are coming in looking for jobs, if they value models as part of their design process and what they want. It's all very well as saying that we think it's very important, but it's quite interesting to know if that's actually still coming
market
through.
Market value.
Yeah.
Really good question. I think it depends on the role in the company and the requirement. I think now it's more about, okay, you got to get your drawings in. We've got to please Max on the technical side that we've got a detail in there. I think a lot of it's like a tick box in the portfolio, like a sample portfolio is really what an architecture practice sees in the inbox or they get sent, isn't it? So it's 10 to 12 pages. And I think it's really important to have a key spread of things. What I do notice is, though, is that a lot of architecture practices resonate to stuff, like you say, like a model in there as well. You've got to get your details. We've got to see that you can do the drawings. However, when you go and add like a physical model or ending on a beautiful sketch is so powerful. I think it's just like the massive cherry on the top. And I think that's where the thought goes, oh my goodness, this person's probably a really good designer. We should meet them. So I think in terms of the structure of the portfolio, I think there's like the function part. This is what I've done in industry. I've been at SoSo. So I've done a commercial building, all this stuff. And then you've got the level of design. And I think that they're complementary. But maybe if you're a part one, it's going to be a bit more potential, a little bit more exploratory. However, I think architecture, it's a lot of facets, isn't it? There's a lot of parts of the job. It's a very hard job. That's what, okay, I still love being involved, but I'm very sympathetic to all the stuff that the architect does. And I think that's why it is important to get the model in it, to have that extra thing. We've also got to have everything else as well. However, the two together, I think, if that CV came across and the portfolio came across Mike's desk, your desk, or somewhere else, it's gonna get interviews. That's what I'm trying to say. That's my thought. Max, you got anything to catch me out on? Come on, give me a zinger.
I don't know if I have, actually. I thought we were only doing one question as a practice. I didn't think of anything. Other than who's Alex?
I'll tell you, my technical skills are questionable. I'd be on Sophie's team. I went all the way. I would just try. But you know, in a smaller architecture practice, because I know medium to smaller, they're in over hiding for me. In EPR, they used to have free kitchens. So I would do a little lap, hide around 250 people. And they'd be like, has Steve done that drawing yet? And I'm like, I was just getting you a tea, Jeff. But what an amazing architectural practice. And so I know you all have to crack on. I don't want to be the reason, even though I love our conversations and I could talk forever. I could talk for whales. I've really enjoyed this. I know you're so busy, but thank you so much for joining me here. Can you stay on the stage for 1 second when I do the outro? Because what I was going to say is, you should all check out Atomic. They're a great architecture practice in Maryland. Okay. You don't need the cookies because you got Atomic there. Check out the work that they do. I love it. Talk about thoughtful design. Check out all their projects. Drop Sophie a message, Max message. And if someone messages Mike about a hat on LinkedIn, I will be so happy. He'd be like, what the
I think
heck
I'd love it, to be fair. He'd love it. That's absolutely fine.
He has lovely hats. It's a great practice. You should all check it out. On that note, thank you so much, Max, Sophie, for being here. I'm going to end the live stream now. Stay on the stage. And for you in the audience, or if you're watching the replay, more content to come. Let's see if we all keep doing physical models in 2034. My goodness. Let's hope that the AI algorithm doesn't win. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Cheers.